Parenting on Moncrief.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. Joanna Fortune is back with us for the new year to answer more of your questions. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Those questions never go away. afternoon at newstalk.com, by the way, if you do have questions for Joanna. Here's the first one. I bought my five-year-old to my granny's funeral. We were sitting right up at the front for the mass with the coffin. And then at the burial, she saw the coffin being lowered into the ground. Since then, she's been quite anxious about this, and I'm afraid I've inadvertently traumatised her. Can you advise if this was the right or wrong thing to do? Is five too young to bring a child to a funeral? What next step should I take with her?
I mean, there literally is, this isn't me being evasive, there is no right or wrong it comes to this, because it depends on the child. It depends on who has died. You know, I think as adults, we get very focused on, you know, how our kids are going to experience it. But, you know, when we lose somebody close to us, a parent or a grandparent, we're going to have an emotional grief response as well. And so sometimes the decision as to whether your young child comes to the funeral is also predicated on, what do I have capacity to mind them that day? Or am I the one who needs the minding? And that's okay. And we have to hold all of that in mind. Either way, Sean, the child has been to the funeral. So whether I think it was right or wrong, the job is done.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm wondering if this parent had prepared the five-year-old ahead of the funeral for the various components, because ground burial is quite an intense idea for a child to grapple with. And if they haven't had that explained to them, then yes, that would have been quite shocking for her to process and now to try and make sense or meaning of. The big thing you want to do now is sit with her in her worries. And so that's hard as parents, especially of the really young kids, not to minimize, dismiss or rescue them from the feelings by going, don't be thinking about that. Don't worry about it. She is worried about it. What's important is she knows she's not alone in those worries. So you're going to bear witness and you're going to name, you know, I think you're having big feelings about this. I think you're confused. I didn't explain this to you. And then you saw it. And you know what? That is confusing. And then you're going to talk to her about it almost in retrospect. So in naming it, you're going to move into reframing it, helping her to understand and explain. And that's really validating for her so that she knows it's okay to feel how she is and there is context to it. The Molly Potter's book, Let's Talk About When Someone Dies, is very helpful for kids and for adults. You know what? It's very helpful for adults. I'm not suggesting you give your five-year-old the book. You can, by the way. It is written for children. But it's very detailed and it covers all aspects. And what I like about Molly Potter's books in general is she really doesn't patronize children. She's writing it in a way, you're ready for this information. This is what it is. So as a parent, I would suggest reading the book first, because what it might do is give you a language, give you a narrative that you can then use to talk to her so that you're covering all of that. Like, you might think, that's great, Joanna, but I have no idea how to talk about ground burial or anything like that. This book will give you the ideas, the way to frame it so that you can talk to her about that. So I would recommend that book. Hold in mind that children, this a little five-year-old, children who are between, and always ages are approximations, you know, it's not as, you know, literal as this, but between 4 and 6 developmentally, they become quite fascinated with death, even when there isn't a funeral or somebody they know that has died. So developmentally, this is also landing at a time when her natural curiosity about death, the permanence of death, what happens after you die, all of that was coming up anyway. So she might be having this bigger response, partly because developmentally there were questions coming. And now she's got these images before the questions had fully formed.
Does the book deal with cremation?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes, it does. And it names it as such. And it talks about all aspects of death. Like, it really is a useful resource.
Yeah.
And there will be bits in it. That's why I always say parents should read it first that don't align with your personal beliefs.
Okay.
Or that you don't necessarily want to discuss. So don't discuss it. It's there just to help you get a, how do I begin this discussion with my child? It's a very helpful resource.
Yeah. I am questioning where I've gone wrong as a mother. Gosh, that's a terrible opening line. My teenagers are acting like entitled, spoiled brats, and I feel like a bad parent because of this. Over Christmas, my two sons were at home a lot, and our home was chaotic without the routine of school. One son is 17, the other's 15. The 15-year-old would sleep until at least midday and refuse to do anything I asked of him. His room is a disgrace. and he barely acknowledges me when I speak to him. While my 17-year-old was out with his friends a lot over the break, I know he was drinking with them. I'm a stay-at-home mother, and I gave up my whole life for these children while my husband worked outside the home. He gives me no support when I lose my temper with them, and I find him so frustrated I yell in anger. My eldest son called me a bitch, still hasn't apologised. I feel him on my last nerve. Why they don't help or pick up after themselves at all. I know teenage rebellion is one thing, but the lack of respect is deeply upsetting. Where do I even start now?
Oh,
gosh, the poor woman.
Absolutely. And, you know, like, there are definitely aspects of this. Like, it would be easy for me to go, well, if your child won't clean his room, here's how to go about it.
Yeah.
But honestly, Sean, there's something else going on here. And what really, you know, jumps out at me, and it's worth mentioning, is just, and the person who wrote this letter in will know more about this. Obviously, we get a snippet, but just to consider parental burnout levels. Parental burnout is a real thing. And, you know, when somebody is in that mode or entering into the burnout stage in parenting, it really leads to feelings of overwhelm, first of all. And this person is overwhelmed with all of the weight of demand. It can also result, as a parent, in feelings of detachment from your kids, becoming quite functional. Feed them, dress them, but there's no bit to connect over and above. Doesn't mean you don't love your kids. It's just that it's hard to give and give and give when you seemingly get nothing back. We all have a saturation point. It can also just culminate in feelings of inadequacy as a parent. You know, I feel I'm failing. Even that opening line, what have I done wrong?
Yeah.
It's all of those things. I gave up my whole life for my children. You know, that feeling is one of overwhelm. But just, you know, none of us should do that, Sean. No parent should be giving up their whole life for their children. You're not doing your children any favors by doing that. You're actually doing them a gross disservice, because they can't be your whole life. That's too much pressure to put on your children. And it's good for them to see that you've a life outside of them. So just no, none of us should carry that as a badge of honor or anything. I think this person needs to talk to your husband first and foremost, and seriously talk. So if that needs to happen outside of the house, plan for it, structure it so that it will be taken as seriously as it needs to. He needs to step up.
Yeah.
When one parent stays at home and the other works outside of home, that does not mean the stay-at-home parent has suddenly become the family CEO who is responsible for everything to do with the children.
Yeah. And
the person who works outside of home is still a parent. So he has to parent these boys with her. It's not okay to go, well, it's your gig. You're the one who's just this as a job. You know, and I also think this person, this woman needs a break. And I mean a literal break away from everybody. A night away in a hotel.
Yeah.
A spa day. Whatever works for you. But you need to actually walk away from this for 24 hours. Give yourself a full break just so that you can take care of yourself. Because those are the responses to burnout in any of us as parents is, you know, self-care, seek support. And if that can't be done with your partner or within your family, seek professional support. Consider a therapist for this that could help and guide you through this, help you get back to yourself, reconnect with yourself. Because until you reconnect within yourself, it's going to be very hard to strengthen the connection with these boys. And when you've a frustrated, burnt out, overwhelmed, fed up parent, we're exuding all of that. And then you've got teenagers who developmentally lean into those kinds of emotional states anyway, but you're feeding off each other. Because a teenager not getting up until at least midday while on a break, not unusual, Sean.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's exceptionally frustrating when you're already frustrated. A 17-year-old drinking or trying alcohol, of course, shouldn't do it, but not unusual.
Yeah.
But again, it's above and beyond what's in the typical range here. There's disrespect going on.
Yeah.
And that needs to be called out, because when your son calls you this name and you're saying hasn't apologized, I'm wondering what the consequences for him for calling that name were. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
And how does he know that that's not okay? Christmas is a hotbed for tensions like this. You know, it is. Everybody is together. There's a lot of hype. It's extended time together at home, break from work, all of that. So if this was bubbling, and I would infer it was, it certainly reached a boiling point over the Christmas time. This is more than just stress. You've got to take care of yourself, not just because it's a nice thing to do, because if you don't, you're going to become unwell with this and things are going to get actually worse than they are. The biggest issue in this letter isn't actually the boy's behavior. And I don't say that that the boys are behaving okay, they're not, and how they're behaving is not okay. The biggest issue is he gives me no support.
Yeah, that's
really what it comes down to.
To an extent of they didn't lick it off the stones, that kind of attitude towards her. Yeah.
Yeah. She's not being respected by her partner, so why would those boys respect her?
Yeah. Yeah, that's maybe a more profound problem there.
I think it's deeper, and that's why I think the seeking of support, start by a serious conversation with your husband, but I actually do think therapy would be a very worthwhile investment for this person.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Yeah, take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
I need help on how to get rid of a soother for a one-year-old. My daughter relies on her soother for bed and naps. I suppose it's a bad habit we got into. She also has a comfort blanket that she sleeps with. She's sharing a bedroom with her two-year-old sister, and we are sleep-deprived enough as two busy working parents juggling a business, so can't let her roar and wake her sister up. How do I wean her off the soother, or should I just allow her have it for a bit longer?
You know, I feel that they want me to say yes to that last bit.
Yes.
I feel like you want me to say yes, so then Joanna said it was okay, so we're just going to shelve this. I don't read this, Sean, and think you're ready to wean her off the soother, because I feel it's working for you just as much as it's working for her. So I don't know, is this coming from one of those parental bits going, gosh, she's one, now is the prescribed time to get rid of the soother? There's nothing in here that tells me that you've got the time to wean, and it is a process to wean anybody off anything. It's a process that requires calm persistence. And, you know, look, if you do want to do it, and of course, any gentle people listening will be saying, of course, they should get rid of it, and certainly by the age of two. But if you are going to do it now, start by phasing it out. First of all, she's only using it for bed and naps.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not all day. Mm. It's not while watching TV. It's not while playing. It's these times. So phase it out by reducing it from the nap, because she's not going to wake her sister up if that doesn't go well.
Yeah.
Okay, so start there. Swap it for something like a little transitional object, we'd call it in my business, but something else she can put all that comfort seeking into, like a little teddy or something soft, a little bit of a beanie teddy if you're doing it. There's a bit of weight in them. They're less likely to lose it in the bed. Mm. That it's easier to hang on to it. Something like that. But you have to be persistent. And if you're going, we just don't have that time, energy or bandwidth to do that right now, then no, don't do it right now.
Yeah.
I do think as well, you know, when a child cries, we rush to the soother. And the clue is in the title.
It's the off switch.
It is. Yeah. When actually, what we're doing, and I get it, but what we're doing is we're teaching them that the soother is the answer to the distress.
Yeah.
And then we say, no, you're not supposed to have that soother. And they're like, well, I don't know what to do with the distress without it.
Yeah.
So we see we're setting them up to fail. I think it's be curious when a child, any child of any age, but this child at this age, be curious about why, when they cry, why are they crying? Cry for a child who is still developing words and language skills. Their cry is a communication. It's a bid to convey something to us. And if we respond by popping the dodie in, then we don't understand what the message was. We've missed something there.
Yeah.
So it may be that she needs a little bit of cuddles, comfort, you know, and if you're saying, no, can't give that right now, then leave the soother where it is. It brings up, though, this whole thing about when our kids are ready to give up things at night and about nighttime. And I was just watching this over the Christmas period again, an episode of Bluey called Sleepy Time. Have you seen it? I cry every time I watch it.
Yeah.
Even though I know what's coming, I'm going to cry when I watch it. So I think sometimes I watch it when I want a good cry and put it on. But as parents, if you haven't seen it, or even if you have, and I'm not saying show it to your one-year-old, as parents, sit and watch that about bedtime, about when kids are trying to let you know that they're ready to move on. And are we as parents? There's a lot of lovely little messages in that, you know, episode that just helps change how we look at kids at bedtime and what they need. Because what they need from us when they're little at bedtime, it feels interminable when you're in it, but it's a short window.
Yes. No, it's true. It's true. It really goes on for a long time. Just going back to that previous question, I was a single parent to three boys. I've learned that there must be consequences for poor behaviour. That is consequences that can be enforced by you. It is exhausting and extremely frustrating. Take time out. Try to hold your own in that swamp of male teenage testosterone. Yeah. But it's not easy.
It's not easy. Indeed, and consequences are, because, you know, we're calling it consequences, but we're also talking about boundaries and limit setting. And that's really important.
Yeah. My wife and I are trying to decide what primary school to send our boy to next September. Neither of us are religious and would prefer if he didn't have to endure all the religious instruction that comes with the traditional national school. However, the Catholic school in our area is the good school that all our neighbours recommend. There is an Educate Together a bit further away, but still within catchment. The problem is this. None of the kids on our estate go to it. We are worried that our boy will be marginalised because of this. What should we do?
This is, and look at the time of year we're at. First of all, if it's for September coming, I'm presuming there's offers on the table
there
for both
be,
these
yeah,
schools.
Yeah.
Or you're living in an area where that isn't pressured.
Wow.
Because I'd be thinking apply to both and see which you get offered, and that's going to actually decide for you. But if you're the one who can make the decision and you've both offers on the table in front of you, you make it based upon what best suits your child and what best suits your family. And sometimes, Sean, you know, I wish there were more choices for families in Ireland, you know, about the types of schools we can send our children to. But as it stands, most, if not all, parents are making that decision based on a list of the pros outweighing the cons. That it mightn't be perfect, it mightn't be exactly what you wanted, but we are trying to say this is more right than it isn't. Mm. So that's going to be where you make this. If you do choose the Catholic school, be aware you're choosing a Catholic school. Mm. So don't be shocked when there's religious education as part of the curriculum. You can communicate with the school that you're non-practicing, that you don't want him to participate in religious education. Many schools are set up for that. There's a set time of day that they do the religious education. Children who don't participate can be given a different task, or various schools set it up in various ways. It is tricky to manage.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that like, oh, and that's simple solution. It's not, because your child is still going to be exposed if they've got a colouring or a worksheet while the others are doing.
Of course,
of course they're hearing and exposed to that.
Yeah.
And but you have entered into that by sending your child to that school.
Mm.
So, you know, you have to weigh it up on what is your main motivations for him at school? Where is it that he's with these kids? He lives close by and they all go there. Then go to that school if that's what's going to be your priority.
Yeah.
If the priority is he goes to the so-called good school, you know, and that can mean all kinds of things, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But if that's it, then go there. So if the religious part is bigger than either of those benefits, go to the other school.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And you can, you know, you don't for communion and confirmation and that kind of stuff.
You can opt out. Of course.
So, yeah.
And this family absolutely should. And you can state that from the very beginning.
Mm.
And you won't be the only family going to that school who opt out, by the way.
Yeah. Our 15-year-old son is struggling after getting dumped by his girlfriend at Christmas. He's desperately trying to put on a brave face, but as his father, I just know he's finding it really hard. He won't talk about it at all. We only knew about the breakup through his sister, who heard it in school. He isn't sleeping either. I hear him moving around during the night. My heart breaks for him. I've tried approaching the subject with him, but he shuts down immediately. Same with my wife. We want to support him through it, but he won't let us in. We used to go to the driving range together every week, and it was our big bonding thing. But ever since he started TY, he doesn't want to do that anymore. Have you any advice now to get him through to him or support him in some way?
Oh, I think it's so hard to watch your child suffering like this. But you know what also jumped out at me here, Sean, is that the way these parents heard it was his sister heard it in school.
Yeah.
So imagine this kid not only has had his first heartbreak, but it's with a girl that he's likely in school with, and the whole school's talking about it.
Yeah.
So no wonder he doesn't want to talk to you about it. He's sick of people talking about it.
Yeah.
And also at 15 years old, he may not know how to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we often presume, well, let's just talk it through, because that's a very adult response to something. But teenagers don't always have the emotional fluency, particularly when they're so activated themselves by what's happening. That could be the worst thing you could say to him. What you could do is do the comfort without speaking it. Thinking favorite meals, little snacks, planning, you know, nice family nights, whatever. Or you might be listening going, leave him alone if that's going to be his comfort. Yeah. You know, leave him alone. Whatever it takes, it's actions over words. We can let our children know we get it. We know you're upset and we're here for you. You can do all of that without saying any of it.
Yeah.
And I think it's often the most effective way to do it. Give him time. Okay. First heartbreak is hard. Encourage him to have his friends over. you know, without you, get some pizzas, whatever it is, game, movies, whatever they're into, encourage him to friends over and to go out with his friends. And while he doesn't want to go to the driving range, you could go back to him and say, you'd love to hit a few balls, but you don't want to do it on your own. Would he come with you? And do not speak about his girlfriend.
Yeah.
While you're there. Just go and if you say come and hit ball, just do that.
Yeah.
And if not, now that he's in TY, there might be something else that he's interested in trying, like an experience day, something that you could go, oh, yeah, I could sign us up for that. Give that a go. Do something to get him out. But just be with him. Like, we can underestimate the value of being with and just bearing witness. Like we said about the other little one, you know, just to actually be there and say, let's hang out. You're not alone. I'm going to get you going, but we won't go there if you don't want to go there.
Yeah, and he's back to school now.
I know, but he's going to be surrounded by reminders.
Oh,
so just go gently with him. Yeah.
Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune, afternoon at newstalk.com if you'd like to send in a question for Joanna.